I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Damn right, we start now on a Football Friday, baby. Get involved. Text in 713-572-4610. You got us on the Odyssey app. You got us on the YouTube. You got us on the Twitch. When I say us, a little bit different version of us on this day, as John Lopez is doing whatever the hell he is on this Friday. And so we welcome in the guy Luke Morrow. What's happening, Luke?
Hey, what's going on? Good to be here. You know, last time I filled in on this show, I was confused. People texted in, said I looked a lot like the co-host that day, Sean Bajani. So today I wore a hat so that we wouldn't have the same confusion.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, well, I feel like that the hat is definitely the biggest differentiator of between us two.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that'll happen.
No. Yeah, y'all really don't look alike too much.
What is it, the braids, to quote Kendrick Lamar? Is that what's happening
here? Yeah, I think
here?
So, yeah.
Okay.
If you ain't had the braids, man, I'd be kind of confused.
Yeah, me and Luke would be twins at that point. Mm-hmm. In fact, I might call him twin all day. I feel like we've also, Sean gave us a gift as he was handing it off. I feel like over the course of this program, we need to put together a football lawsuit. Just who did crimes against humanity in football? So go ahead and text those in as we go along the show. I don't know how I'm going to manage to handle that, but I'm just going to try my best. I've got myself a little docket pending here. So text those in throughout the program, 713-572-4610. Let's see if we can put together a good class action.
Yeah, I mean, add Nathan Peterman to that list right away. I mean, there's so many to choose from over the years, and hopefully not many on the Texan side.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, the Peterman. I like the Peterman. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and put that down. Defendant number one, Nathan Peterman. Very good. but yeah, that's happening, and the reason why that came up in the course of the cross, if you were not listening all of 3 minutes ago, was, hey man, Brian Flores in this thing has a little bit of a revenge aspect going back to his lawsuit where he had very many people in the NFL.
I totally forgot
that
about
he was aggrieved
this,
by. Yeah, man. I didn't forget about the lawsuit, but I did forget that the Texans were involved there, and specifically like the circumstances that got you there for Brian Flores. And I don't know, in thinking about it, because I do want to ask over the course of this first segment, just like who will have the biggest impact in their revenge games. I mean, Flores is going to have an impact, and obviously the ways that he does things, but it's funny to think about, like, clearly you could see some players, you know, playing hard, making a big play and things like that. I do wonder, like, what would be the tangible vision of Brian Flores getting his revenge in this game? Like, obviously, there's the scheming aspect, but does he end up with the Mike Tomlin on the sideline tripping somebody? Right? Like, how does he affect his revenge in a way that is more tangible?
I think there's always been that chip on the shoulder of Flores in Minnesota the last 2 years because of that lawsuit, regardless of the opponent, whether it's the Texans or anyone else, trying to show how good of a coach he is. I mean, he was out of the league. Tomlin gives him a chance, the aforementioned Tomlin in Pittsburgh, just to be like a linebacker's coach. And then he becomes defensive coordinator in Minnesota, and he's done a great job the last 2 years. And I think he's just taking it out on everybody each week to show, like, hey, I am a really good coach. Things ended awkwardly, obviously, in Miami. And plus, he's a Belichick guy. So I think he always has that chip on his shoulder of trying to prove people wrong and having that kind of nasty side to him. There might be a little extra this weekend against the Texans, but I think every week for Flores trying to show, hey, you know, I should be a coach in this league. And I'll also say, not often does that guy get an opportunity. I mean, not to go down the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, but people always point to, he's suing the league. Of course, why would the league want to bring him in? Similar, not often can you sue your employer and still get a job from said employer. So it's interesting that Flores is the defensive coordinator with the lawsuit going on, and he's been doing a great job, and I'm sure there'll be a little extra something this Sunday.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair point to make. I just also wonder, like, how does that actually come through? Like, what is that? Does he send a few extra blitzes, right, as opposed to just simulated? He's like, no, we're sending five or six on this one just to do it. I want them to feel this pain. But, all right, so we say that, and I don't want to overlook the things with this game. Obviously, big-time game, couple of 2-0 teams, probably, and I mean, probably feels light, right? It's the biggest test that the Texans have had thus far, mm-hmm. especially when you look at the way that we now see the Colts after, you know, seeing them go along in week two against the Packers and look woeful once more, right? Maybe that it was a little bit more lopsided of a matchup than we had previously imagined going into week one. But, right, there's some revenge elements to this, right? There's a lot of familiarity between these two teams. And Nick Caserio was asked earlier in this week, just about, you know, how much stock you can put into the whole guys playing against their former teams thing.
It's probably more common than you realize. Players change teams often,
right?
Mm-hmm. So typically you're going to see a number of players that were either in your building, they were in another building, they're going to come through your building. Once you get into the season, it's really about that week and the game plan specific to that opponent. So is there some familiarity with our players? There always is, but you've seen it, you see it across the league. Like typically every team that you play against, probably somebody that you've either been with or coach, same thing on a coaching front. So familiarity, you know, there it is there and exists, but sometimes there's probably a little bit too much emphasis that's placed on Frankfurt.
You with Nick Caserio on playing down the idea of the revenge game?
In general, maybe. I mean, right, big breaking news there in the beginning about, hey, guys change teams all the time in the NFL. Yeah, I know.
No way. Get out of here.
I was shocked to hear it, too. But I do think in this particular instance, there is a pretty big revenge factor in the sense of specifically, obviously, Stephon Diggs. We know about that whole story. And even him and Justin Jefferson. I mean, it didn't end well with Diggs in Minnesota. And from my friends there in Minnesota, they tell me this is a big game for Justin Jefferson, too. I know he's got the injury concern, but you know, I'm told there's no chance he's going to miss this one because he wants to be out there to go up against Stephon Diggs. Because even for Justin Jefferson, just to stray away from the main point here for a second, it's like the guy in a relationship and his girlfriend says, like, hey, my ex is going to be at this event that we're going to tonight.
Yeah.
You want to do your
Dress
best.
It up.
Justin
Dress
Jefferson
it up.
Replaced Stephon Diggs, so now they're going head-to-head. You know, he wants to do his part on the other side as well, and Diggs returned to Minnesota. So I think for both those guys, Diggs is an emotional guy to begin with, and I think this game will carry a little something extra for him. Danielle Hunter didn't have such an ugly exit in Minnesota, so maybe not so much. But for Hunter, I forgot who said it after last week's game against the Bears, but somebody on the Texans defense said, yeah, Hunter was telling us, you know, what to look for in the Bears offensive line because he went up against that offensive line for years. Well, imagine what he knows about that Vikings offensive line and that offense having just come from Minnesota where he spent his entire career. So I think for Diggs, it's more of that emotional thing that he wants to put on a big show. Danielle Hunter, I think, has that edge where he could take advantage of the X's and O's and help out his fellow defensive linemen as well in this matchup on Sunday. So I think to answer your question, all that said, long-winded answer, I don't buy the Caserio thing for this specific game because I think there's something kind of on the line for both those.
Yeah, players. There's a lot of, I mean, familiarity is the word that keeps coming up because it's just, it's a lot deeper here, right? It's deeper than rap in this one. And you mentioned Danielle Hunter and how, you know, there's people on the on this defense talking about the idea of, hey, man, he just had such a good, you know, understanding of what the Bears were doing and being able to do that. Matt Burke yesterday was talking to the media, and I found this to be very interesting, right? He was asked about, you know, how he would describe Danielle Hunter defensively and how he does his work.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He spends a lot of time working that craft. You see, like, even his heat, staying after practice and things like that don't, you know, he's a very fundamentally, like, handwork, you know, like, walks through all of his rushes that he wants to execute to make sure his footwork's right. Constantly out there, like, there'll be an offensive period, he's in the back talking about something or asking about a thing. You know, I mean, he's just very into working, you said it, working his craft, and almost to a perfectionist level. So, it's actually really cool watching him work, even like one-on-ones. We had one-on-ones today. Just he can tell you everything, like, whether he wins or loses, why it happened, what he was trying to do, what he saw. Oh, man, I wanted to do this, but then he set this way, so I didn't do this. So, man, I miss with my inside hand. Next time I'm going to put it here. You know, like, he's very in tune to those things as you go. So it's cool, like, even on game days, talking what's happening out in the field and how we can take advantage of that. So, yeah, very, very, besides big picture, I'm learning football and I'm learning the defense. He's very in tune with the details of pass rushing and how to work his craft. So it's fun getting feedback from him and kind of learning from him as well.
You got to imagine someone that's detail oriented would have the capabilities and the abilities to, with a team that he has played with previously, bring you a level of insight into how this team works. And it's not like played with in the distant past, like last season, right? Like, he has a familiarity with this offense and with the ways that they go in a way that, I know sometimes we do this with the players moving back and forth, but Danielle Hunter, I imagine, has a lot more that he's able to bring to the table than your average, oh, he used to play with that team player.
Absolutely. I mean, Diggs, it's been a few years. Cam Akers was there last year, but as a backup running, but he can't have that same intellectual impact that I think Danielle Hunter can. And I think in this game in particular, not to state the obvious, but that's going to be one of the biggest. These are the two top sacking teams, weird way to say it, two of the top teams that get after the quarterback in the league going up against one another. And that's going to be one of the deciding factors on Sunday. And Hunter's going to play a huge role, not only for himself, but everybody else in that front seven to try to attack this offense. Coach has always told me that when you get a player from another team, you learn more about the other side of the football, right? So, like, Danielle Hunter won't necessarily help them so much with the Brian Flores defense, but he can help you with how to attack this offense. Sam Darnold was on the 49ers practice squad, or rather on the roster, I should say, last year. Then he comes over to Minnesota. He played really well against the Niners last weekend for the Vikings, and part of that was, well, he practiced against that defense every day and then went up against it. So, same idea now for Danielle Hunter. He practiced against this Vikings offense every day last year, and now for the first time gets to go up against it in a game and gets to tell his teammates, hey, here's what to look for. So I think Danielle Hunter is the guy that could have the largest impact this weekend for those quote-unquote revenge guys against the Vikings.
All right, so Danielle Hunter is brought up. You mentioned Stephon Diggs. You quickly kind of hinted at Cam Akers. I feel like we need to dig into this a little bit more because obviously with the absence from practice of your top two running backs on the depth chart in Joe Mixon, who is your bell cow at this point, and then also in missing Damian Pierce from practice, you're really veering towards a situation where Cam Akers quite possibly might be RB1 in this game. And one of the things he said, and obviously you always love when this quote comes up, the idea of you ain't got to get ready if you stay ready, right? Like, he has that level of mindset, which, I mean, you saw already in the preseason and in training camp when he is, you know, they call him in because he just happens to be in town. Hey, you want to come through and work out with the team? And all of a sudden he shows you enough to not, you know, to make this team, not even just like in a practice role, a practice squad rather capacity, but as a guy that people are looking at as, hey, he should be your second running back. Now he has an opportunity to, you know, have more of an impact against the team that he has played with, and a team not only has he played with, there is like that revenge emotional aspect, I imagine, in there some way. What? Because that's a team that, you know, decided to cut him loose because they did not think that he could do this to a magnitude that was necessary anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that he definitely has a huge opportunity to be useful in the course of this, right? And I think that this is where I'd like to go to Bobby Slowick, because Bobby Slowick was asked, what does Cam Akers do well that suits this offense?
I'm bringing it up right now.
Oh, my bad. Bobby Slowick was talking about Cam Akers because, like, again, he has the opportunity to get a lot of carries, or at least the lion's share of the carries, however much they run the football in this game, to be able to do that. So again, what Bobby Slowick was asked, what does Akers do so well that suits this offense?
Yeah, he's great vision. He's been running, Ram zone scheme. He came from, he did the same thing in Minnesota. He's really good at reading that. We call it riding the wave, finding the right hole to hit. He always plays under control. When he sees it, he hits it. He finished physical, and he has really good contact balance, you know, and I'd say those like are the things that jump out with Cam. You pretty much see that every carry.
Thoughts on that? Like, I mean, seeing Cam Akers, the way that Bobby Slowick is kind of glowingly talking about his capability in this offense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think so, you know, to answer the question of who will have the biggest impact of these quote-unquote revenge guys, answer it a couple different ways. I think Danielle Hunter will. I think Cam Akers will have the greatest opportunity. Because if he is that starting running back, I mean, not only we could talk about the whole, here's a chance for him to leap Damian Pierce on the depth chart if Pierce doesn't play, Akers gets the start, yada, yada, yada. But also, if I'm the Vikings, like, I'm going to try to limit Stroud as much as I can. Texans are down to their third-string running back. Like, let them try to run on you. And the Vikings' rushing defense has been really good under Flores the last 2 years. So I'm going to try to give, as a defense, more opportunities to Akers and see what he can do with it. So I think Akers will have the opportunity to have the largest impact. I don't know if he will going up against this defense, filling in. And also, like, he hasn't been that lead back for 2 years with an Achilles injury, a second one mixed in there. So if he is the starting running back, how many carries does that look like Sunday? How much can he carry the load? How effective would it be? And after that fumble against the Bears, I don't think he saw the field again this past week. So there's some concern there, I guess, too, maybe with they didn't like that fumble, you know, at the goal line and earning back some of the trust in the game Sunday. Sure. So I think there is a great opportunity for Akers. What will he do with that opportunity? Of course, that remains to be seen. But so far, it's been good in preseason and in the limited carries last week.
So we talked about the familiarity within this matchup, and we've only really been on the Texans side. There's some other guys on the other side, especially if you're talking about just the revenge aspect of it, because there's a couple of dudes who were prominent on this defense last year in Brian Cashman, and then also Jonathan Grenard. And I think that those are really interesting ones because Grenard in particular, if he wanted to have a grudge against this Houston Texans team, I think he could, right? Like we have gushed about Danielle Hunter, and it felt like that was a move in letting Grenard go and bringing in Danielle Hunter, not exactly like a singular move, but kind of a pair of moves that was absolutely one that was done because of a want to upgrade. And I think that is fair to say that was an upgrade, but if you're the dude who's being upgraded on, that might make you feel some type of way. And I think that the move has been a win-win for both sides because the Vikings have been able to do fantastic things. You mentioned the fact that they are one of the better, if not one of the best, pressure teams. And I mean, they get the most pressure as early on in this season around the league. So yeah, those guys are going to provide some really difficult challenges against this Texans offense with CJ Stroud, because particularly the way that Brian Flores' defense works, they're trying to create chaos and simulated pressures and all those things. And those two guys, Blake Cashman, sorry, I call him Brian. I was thinking Brian Cushion again because, he's always kind of in my mind somewhere.
Yeah, or Yankees GM Brian Cashman.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the Yankees GM.
Ooh, okay.
Brian Cashman.
Maybe that's also where I was going.
We've been saying Brian Cashman early on last year, too.
Okay. Well, so I'm just going through the process later than everybody else. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me feel better. I'm in a group of good people. But yes, Blake Cashman, thank you, 832, for keeping me clean there. But yeah, Blake Cashman and Jonathan Grenard, both of them, I think, provide a level of option, a level of possibility in affecting this game in a big way. Because for me, this defense and what they do with those pressures is probably the biggest story in the matchup of this thing.
And both guys have been playing really well. I mean, small sample size, only 2 weeks, but they've been doing really well in that Vikings defense. Cashman played really well against the Niners last week, and then JG is not getting so much to the quarterback in terms of sacks, but he's up there in pressures. Kevin O'Connell was raving about him this week, about pressuring the quarterback. You know, a lot of defensive coaches will tell you that's the more telling stat than sacks, and he's opened the lane for some of those other guys. Like you mentioned, that Brian Flores defense, it's almost like getting an assist. If you can create pressure on one part of the field, opening up a lane for somebody else, because he sends guys from all over the field, you don't know where the blitzes or pass rushers are coming from. That's a huge help to that defense, and that's what Grenard has done so far this year. And then I'll take it back to Casario's comments that we played a few moments ago, because I think that adds an extra element to this idea of revenge when you swap these guys. And I think, like you said, it's a win-win for both sides, but still, for these players, you know, throw up the Michael Jordan meme, like, I took that personally. You know, you're going up against the guy that replaced you, so I think that's an added element. Yeah, guys change teams all the time, but not often do they then face that team and go up against a team that plucked somebody else from the team you're on now to replace you. Like, you know, there's all those parallels that I think makes it really fascinating.
All right, so I want to throw one more potential answer out here. Could it possibly be former Texans linebacker Max Tooley, who was signed to the practice squad of the Vikings, right? This is the thing that we see frequently, and probably the thing that Casario was trying to bat away within the question that was asked of him. But, like, he is the person on the Vikings who is most recently with the Texans and maybe has more of the possibility of bringing some knowledge of the current playbook, both defensive and offensive, to that Vikings team, do you think that he has any level of impact, or if the possibility of him having the largest impact?
I would hope not. Very little impact. Anything he could, you know, I don't think he brings much to the table in terms of insight. You hope the Texans don't go Bill Callahan and they actually change like their signs and signals on the sideline. You know, unlike Callahan against the Bucks in that Super Bowl 20 years ago. So I think very little impact. I'm surprised Keaton Slovis is still on the Texans practice squad. I thought they brought him in just for that Colts Week 1 matchup to get insight, but here he is still with the team. Max Tulia, no, unfortunately, sorry, Max, I think you're bottom of the list.
So if they lose this game, it's because of Max Tulia.
Look, I'm willing to put that on the table. It's a possibility. We have to consider all possibilities within the course of this. I think that is a reasonable and fair way. No, I'm just playing.
Yeah.
No, I don't think Max Tulia is going to be the differentiating factor.
Forget Diggs, forget Danielle Hunter. This is the Max Tulia game.
I've often said that, honestly. Yeah. That's always been my perspective on this. All right, man, we're just getting going on a football Friday here in the Loop. You got Luke Morrow in for John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atatula, hanging out with you. Last night, we saw the Astros get another win with Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. Plus, this weekend could show us a possible last in a couple of regards. Let's talk about that and more next.
Figgy, let's hit him big time.
Because it's Friday, you ain't got no job, and you ain't got shit to do.
Houston, let's get in the Loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez and Reggie Atatula. Always live.
Love it. Love it.
Always local.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
You're in the Loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Yes, sir. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. You got my man Figgy Fig in the producer's room. Myself, Reginald Atatula. John Lopez decided to take the Friday off, though. You know what he's doing, Fig? Is he fishing?
Nah, he's doing something kind of related to fishing. I think this is his third time doing this, where it's some type of event, charity event.
Yeah, third annual charity event.
I think he's been doing this for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it seem like he was playing hooky. Like he was, you know, just
He probably is. It wouldn't surprise me if he was.
Nah, he's handling his business. And so in his stead, we welcome in our guy, Luke Morrow, filling in. Luke, what's happening, brother?
Hey, you know, of all Fridays to miss, it's for a good reason. But, man, you got a great matchup Sunday with these two 2-0 teams and the biggest test so far. I mean, really, maybe for both of these teams, biggest test so far early in the season. So happy to be here to be able to break it down with you throughout the next few hours.
All right, Fig, I'm going to be completely honest. I did all that just to get Luke to talk because somebody texted in and said, just got in the car and thought Nick was on the whole time. Is Luke his voice doppelganger? Do you hear a similarity between Nick Caserio and our guy Luke Morrow?
I do. I kind of hear that. Really? I do. I do. I seem like it. It seemed like Luke is a little more smooth, though.
I want to do a side by side comparison. We'll talk a little bit about the Astros here in a second, but we need to do the investigative journalism that's necessary in this moment to nail down if these guys sound alike. You had Nick Caserio earlier in the week talking about guys playing against their former team. Can you go ahead and play that right quick?
It's probably more common than you realize. Players change teams.
Okay, stop there.
Often.
I need you to say that same thing. It's probably more common than you realize. Players change teams all the time.
It's probably more common than you realize. Players change teams all the time.
It's probably more common than you realize. Players change teams.
It's not far off.
Often.
Even I can hear it.
It's not far off. It's not exactly the same, but it's not far off. Okay.
Yeah, y'all kind of, I mean, I know Nick Caserio is technically from Ohio, Northeast Ohio, but he kind of been in the neck of the woods, kind of where you at, that East Coast.
That's true. Yeah, he spent a number of years up there not far from me, where I was born and raised, so. Yeah, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, maybe he got that East Coast voice down pat.
I've heard that before when filling in on these airwaves, so it's not the first person to say that.
All right, so I'm going to keep that just in case we ever need to do a fake Nick Caserio. Right?
Yeah.
Just got to keep that in the back pocket. Another thing that we have going on a Football Friday, we're doing nonsense, kind of. We're putting together a football lawsuit, class action lawsuit against all the violators and war criminals against the sport of football. And it's watchers, and thus far we have, I think, three defendants that we are naming. Nathan Peterman, just for the 5-interception game alone, and then somehow managing to keep a job afterwards. Mm-hmm. Brandon Staley for answering just all the dumb questions, and also for those of you that are analytically inclined, for constantly besmirching the good name of analytics. And then Bill O'Brien, I think, for the chin. I think that's the reason why somebody texted in, or it might be because, you know, he kind of, you know, messed up the organization for a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, then thank the Vikings, right? He got fired after the Vikings they didn't hand it to him. It was a close game. But these same Vikings playing Sunday. Bill O'Brien's final game was after he lost to them.
Okay. So, yeah, keep sending in the folks that we should add to our football
class.
What about
Nathaniel Hackett?
Oh, yeah.
Head coach Nathaniel Hackett in Denver.
Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett.
Man. That time management was brutal. Although, to the point the whole crowd was counting down the clock, man.
They were doing it like Giannis at the free throw line.
Yeah, it was bad, man.
That is hilarious. although I will say that maybe he was actually a help to us because that just meant I didn't have to watch a Broncos game. I was just like, don't need to watch this.
I feel like a Broncos game was on every single weekend, like nationally, when this dude was the head coach. I'm like, man, I feel like they was playing Sunday night, Thursday night, Monday night. It seemed like they was on all the time.
Also, just the fact that they hired him in hopes that it would get them Aaron Rodgers, right?
It's that's like, a fail. That's a fail just to begin with.
That's too. So sad. And I don't know if I'd even want to be Hackett like that. Like, you're only getting invited to the party, so you bring your hot friend, too. Like, it's.
And then the hot friend didn't even go.
Yeah, right. Then they stood you
they
up.
Didn't even show up.
Yeah, that's a bruise to the ego.
Yeah, but then you get paid. Right? Like, that's the thing about the Astros.
Yeah.
You know what? We'll circle back around to the Astros because I don't want to shortchange them. I want to lean fully into this football class action lawsuit because we just got a text in from the 832 Brock Osweiler. I feel like we might possibly need to create a subsection for Legends at the Bank because I feel like Brock Osweiler is a legend at the bank. Didn't he get that? Yeah. Was that 17 mil or what have you?
Yeah.
Just from the couple games in the playoffs.
It's what Andrew Brandt calls sports business Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and I simplify that to Legends at the Bank, right?
Yeah.
You got to put Matt Flynn in there too.
Matt Flynn, just off that one game,
one game.
Green Bay.
Yep.
And then he went and he got two jobs off of that because the Seattle Seahawks got him.
Yep.
And then after that, the Raiders were like, "We'll take a flyer on it. He might be in there." And nope.
So many guys like that. Kevin Cobb was another. I think he got two jobs out of it.
Did he really? I didn't remember that. Yeah. Because I remember
Buffalo
him
in Arizona, I think.
Yeah, I was like, I remember him in Arizona for sure. I guess that's fair. Yeah, keep sending those in. Some other guys that we should add to the football class action lawsuit. I feel like if we expand this to the college wing, I feel like I would love to add, what's my guy at Iowa, the head coach, as I just forgot.
Who, Kirk Ferentz?
Kirk Ferentz. There we go. Yeah, Kirk Ferentz, first of all, for his football nepotism of hiring Brian Ferentz, who I believe fully with all my heart and most of my kidney, is the worst offensive coordinator I might have ever seen.
I'm with you there.
Like, just they went into games and they were like, 7 points going to have to be enough. Like, or we're kicking field goals. If we can win with field goals, man, we can do this.
They had to put into his contract last year. Like, if you don't average 20 points a game, you're out of here. It's such a low standard.
And then they publicized that, like, hey, guys, we're handling it.
Yeah, right.
We're handling it. We've heard your complaints. Bad. We have heard your complaints about not lacking offense. And we will handle it by making sure that it is contractually relevant for him to score points. And then he didn't.
Nope.
So he absolutely is going on the class action lawsuit. Is there anyone else that comes to mind for you when it comes to just like football criminals? Guys who are just like, hey, man, what did you do? Why did you do that? You have harmed us irreparably.
Is it too early? I mean, this is probably a layup right here, but Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. You go on here, man.
A thief, man.
Because also
straight up thief,
right? Like, I feel like the plaintiffs here are just all of us watching football, right? There's specifically Browns fans in that organization for being a thief, but I feel like all quarterbacks got to be mad at him because, like, I was super excited as someone who is a dork who enjoys like the labor negotiations and battles of these things for the prospect of we're seeing this guaranteed money going up and up. Who is going to be able to make fully guaranteed stick, right? Not just that it happens, but can it stick? Lamar Jackson seemed like he was well poised to really push that forward. Deshaun Watson got out here stinking up the joint, and they were like, Lamar, if there's one thing, we love you, right? You fit the city of Baltimore perfectly and all that. We not give you
it. It was
not because of that over there?
Yeah.
Ain't no way.
It was one thing just giving somebody a fully guaranteed contract like that, especially with the stuff he was going through in the offseason. And plus, you stink. Like, I think people can look past it if he was 2020 Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, right.
But, dog, you are one of the worst quarterbacks in the league.
And they worked into the contract so he wouldn't even get punished financially knowing, like, the suspension was coming. So there was that whole angle of just, like, that's shady, too. You know, you made your bed laying it a little bit, but... Yeah,
mad at the Browns as well. I feel like we could put the Browns on.
Yeah, I'm just saying from a Browns perspective, that was a bad that like he should be on this list. That's good for Texans fans.
Yeah, man.
I felt like they made out pretty good.
Yeah, 832 mentioned you end up with CJ Stroud, Stingley, Will Anderson Jr., all because because of what's happening with Deshaun Watson going over there. Plus more. Like, Hannah McNair, a fan of that deal, I guess, in some ways. But, yeah, just for, I guess, the football fan in general, yeah, man, you did not help the situation. Some folks throwing out Jimbo Fisher. Yeah, Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher kind of hurt a couple of places because you notice that he left Florida State, and that the cupboards were barren there. Mm-hmm. The cupboard, when he did not have the likes of a elite college football quarterback, that thing stunk. And then he went to A&M and took all that money. And what has he left? Not much.
No, I know. It's he was like the John Gruden of college football, where Gruden won that one Super Bowl and lived off of it for years and made a bunch of money, and then turned out like, he's actually not a very good guy. And that's kind of like Jimbo Fisher.
Did you see that John Gruden is trying to be the John Gruden of college football? Like, apparently he still wants to coach, and he knows that. Speaking of suing a league or whatever, he's currently suing behind that
just emails and all
emails
that.
Or whatever. He felt like he was particularly targgeted in the ways that those things were released. He's like, he still wants to coach, and so it seems like the possibility is going to college football. I am very interested on what that looks like, what John Gruden looks like in college football.
Yeah, he's just going to go down each level till he can find a job. It's kind of like Gary Kubiak, I guess, is like a consultant to Polish football right now, some Polish football league. Eventually, Gruden's going to have to get to that level to get another head coaching job.
I didn't hear that story. You said he was doing what exactly?
Gary Kubiak is consulting for the Polish football league, apparently.
God bless him, man. You got the people that love this sport really love this sport, man.
Yeah.
Like, just I do wonder. He is a consultant, right? I don't think that he has to live in Poland or whatever. But I wonder what that consulting looks like.
Consulting is always a dream job. You just sit at home. You like send
off a
text or an email. Hey, here's what you should do. And then you sit back and collect a paycheck. And especially for a guy like that. He's just hanging out at home.
I appreciate
money.
I appreciate people like that. People like Wade Phillips, who's still trying to, who willing to coach anything at this point because they just love the game.
I knew a guy who was a defensive consultant for an ACC football team. And just what I said, he would sit at home, he'd watch the game on TV at his home. He lived in another state. And then he'd send a text to one of the assistant coaches at halftime, like, here's my thoughts. And then that was it. And he'd get paid. And
God
it was
bless,
like,
man,
yeah,
man.
If you could be a consultant, that's the way to go.
Hey, do we need to start a consulting firm? Because also, the consulting game is racket, as we have completely shifted from the football class action lawsuit that we were trying to do into just, like, how can we make money, which I guess is the American way, right? But, like, I'm always amazed by the consulting that happens in the college football, kind of realm around the coaching carousel, when it's like, oh, man, who are we going to hire? And for the longest time, the answer was one of Coach Nick Saban's assistants, right? And they would go and they'd get the consulting firm to do the research and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's like, hey, you know who the offensive coordinator is at Alabama? Go hire that guy, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
I would love to get into that game because I could tell you who to hire. Just one of the dudes off of the tree that's real popular in the NFL. Yep. Go find out who calls plays for one of these Shanahan systems. Go hire that guy.
Yeah, colleges do it all the time. They also will hire a consulting firm, spend tons of money, and they'll say, oh, that guy already on campus
that's
down the hall?
Yeah.
Hire him.
Yeah.
And that happened at a school I once worked with. And a lot of people were upset. Like, what did we spend the money for? We could have done that. The guy's right here.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll circle back to the Astros because I thought you say had a fantastic night while not having great stuff. I thought that was the thing that was really impressive to me. He managed to go six innings in a game where it didn't look like he'd make it out of four early on for me. And so those are the things that were incredible. Plus, again, there's something interesting to be seen this weekend when it comes to a couple of potential lasts for this Astros team. We'll still circle back around to that. But coming up next, who's your favorite sports broadcaster of all time? This is our question of the day, and it's inspired by a current broadcaster looking like he's going to get some more money. We'll do that next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adatula.
That's right. You're In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Myself, Reginald Adatula, with Luke Morrow sitting in for our guy, John Lopez, who has the day off. Figgy Fig always here for you. Want to keep it locked for 120 when we'll get to Figgy's mixtape on a Friday. I'm sure that'll be a blast. But right now, the question of the day. Who is your favorite sports broadcaster of all time? It's inspired by NBC. There was some news in the sports business world, which I know not everybody cares about, but I'm bringing it to you regardless. They were working on a deal to keep Chris Collinsworth signed up through the end of the decade. So basically 2030, rather. We'll see if that's where it ultimately ends up. But that I see him be on the call for two more Super Bowls. And just continue to have his rapport with now Mike Tirico on those Sunday night games. But I, as I saw this news, I was like, man, I wonder how people feel about this particular news, because there's some people that really do enjoy Collinsworth, but there's some people that don't like his calls at all, and I've always been interested by that.
Yeah, he's very divisive. I just anecdotally, I think more people are anti-Chris Collinsworth than for him. I've always been a big Collinsworth guy. I like him. I do think he's gotten a little lazier in recent years.
Mm.
I do think he was better early on. He's kind of become shtick with the whole slide in. Here's a guy. He plays into that.
I think they stopped the slide.
Did they?
I think they stopped the slide with Tirico now.
All right, good. As they should. Right? It became a little too shticky, and he plays into the, you know, here's a guy. He's got like a commercial now based off of that. So I think he's become, which happens a lot of times. I mean, it happened with Madden, and Madden was great, but you become kind of like a caricature of yourself. So I still like Collinsworth. I'm a fan. But I do think he was better maybe a few years ago. That's not to say he's doing a bad job now, but I think he's slipped a little bit in quality.
So you're saying it'll deteriorate by the end of the decade. Okay, I hear you.
Probably.
But that got me thinking, like, who are your favorites, right? Who are the sports broadcasters that really make you smile? Because I always find it interesting, and I've often said this for myself, is like, I find myself not really paying as much attention to the broadcasters themselves. A lot of times, especially not necessarily tuning into a game for a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been a lot of conversation about broadcasters and like ratings. And I know Seth made a great point earlier in the week, or maybe last week, about how maybe that it's not necessarily about the ratings themselves, but more about the ability to sell them on the TV side. But that's inside baseball. But I know for those people watching, there are still some that stand up above the bunch, right? And for me, one of those is definitely Kevin Harlan. Like, that's one of my favorites, who, when I think of sports broadcasts that do their thing really well, he's easily one of those ones that come up. And the reason for me is I expect the whoever the play-by-play man or whatever, right, the analyst, to try and help me consume the game better. And one of the ways that helps me consume the game better, I'm usually here for entertainment. Like, show me that you're enjoying it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're enjoying it, I can enjoy it better, too. And Harlan seems like he is always enjoying the hell out of broadcasting the game.
For sure. Yeah, you stole my answer. I was going to say Kevin Harlan.
You're welcome.
I think because a couple things. I mean, to be able to do the different sports is tough, and he does them all so well. And especially for Harlan, he'll do tomorrow or Sunday. He'll do a game Sunday for CBS. He does Monday night on Westwood One on radio. So he does TV in one city on a Sunday, flies to another city overnight, does the game on the radio Monday night. Those are different styles. Then he'll do a basketball game once we get to basketball season on a Tuesday or a Thursday, go back to the NFL. He's doing March Madness. It's crazy. I think he's the best football on radio play-by-play guy I've ever listened to, which doesn't cover all of broadcasting,
sure,
the history of the industry, but I think he's the best specifically at football on the radio, and he's my favorite specifically for that.
Some other ones that came in on the text line, Fig, I'm interested in what your answer is. Someone brought up John Madden, and yeah, you mentioned how he could become a caricature, but I think that's because the character was larger than life, and mm-hmm. I always appreciate, like, people talk about him as like football guy, consummate football guy, and he had that, right? That felt like it came through on the broadcast, but also a legitimate TV innovator at this point with the ways that he's, you know, innovated the way things go. I mean, the telestration mm-hmm. was something that came out of his mind. Like, it wasn't just he did this and some producer came up with it. No, he came out of his mind like, I would love to be able to do this. And that changed the way that we view the, you know, watch football. Like, legitimately a legend in the game in multiple ways.
Yeah, he sure is. I mean, let alone the video game outside of the whole broadcasting. But
true.
But yeah, when it comes to the football analysts, that's who everyone should strive to be. And it goes to what you mentioned earlier about, you know, he was obviously a football guy. I mean, he was a football coach. He knew his X's and O's, and he was good on all that stuff, and he was great at explaining it in layman's terms to the audience, but he was also so entertaining, and he could do both. A lot of guys are really good at breaking down the football or basketball, baseball side, but they're kind of bland. Some guys, like Tony Romo, might be entertaining, but doesn't really add much to the table.
Yeah, and you talk about getting lazy. I think he might have gotten lazy pretty quick.
Yeah, you're not kidding. He's tough to listen to. But Madden was able to do both really well.
Fig, what for you? Like, who comes to mind for you when it comes to, like, great sports broadcasts?
I agree with y'all. Kevin Harlan's one of my favorites. So I got a couple more, too. I like, not Al Michaels. I'm thinking of what's his name?
Jim Nance? Are you doing the same thing I did?
No. I'm thinking Marv Albers.
Ah, yes.
I felt like he was just so smooth with it. I'm a big fan of Mike Breen.
Bang!
Yeah, I like Mike Breen. Honestly, this might be a hot take in Houston because a lot of people don't like this guy, but Joe Buck.
Joe Buck is an interesting one.
I like Joe Buck and Troy
Aikman.
Yeah, man. I think they solid. I don't think it's nothing special, but I felt like he's fine. Like I haven't complained about Monday Night Football in a minute. And remember,
buddy,
it was rough.
Yeah,
at one point,
Joe Tessitore got handled. Joe Tessitore is a funny one about like you know he speaks to one of those things in sports where if you find your right lane, you're in the right place. Because Joe Tessitore doing Monday Night Football and it was tough. You put Joe Tessitore on some boxing.
Oh, he's great,
incredible.
Hey, yeah. He was good in WWE. They put him in WWE. He was actually all right.
That place.
Yeah,
we got to give some love locally. Mark Vandermeer is incredible. We are quite blessed to have him on the calls of things. Some other ones that came in. Someone brought up Gus Johnson, talking about bringing the excitement and nicknames as well.
Yeah,
all of those things. Like he will bring that to the table in spades.
Yeah, I'm not a Gus Johnson guy. Never.
Oh, really?
No, he's great for the big moments. He's great for the climax of the game. But it's the everything else, the other 98% that I think he botches. He always gets names wrong. Doesn't know if it's a first down or not. I'm not a Gus Johnson guy.
Oh wow. Okay. Some other ones that come in. We mentioned John Madden. Let me see. Someone mentioned Stuart Scott, rest in peace. Howard Cosell, going back, is one of their favorites. Some other ones that came in. Let me see. I want to make sure I didn't miss anyone. Someone said Collinsworth and Joe Buck equally trash. Again, those guys end up being real lightning rods with those. Jeff Van Gundy. I enjoy Jeff Van Gundy quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I understand why he could get to be much because Jeff Van Gundy be doing old man. I think that got tough if they was not in the right situation. In a runaway game where there's nothing to talk about, I loved him and Mark Jackson just kind of doing the shtick. It kind of got tough when you're like, hey, but there's a basketball game actually happening, guys. Right. Pat Summerall, absolutely one you got to throw up there. Iron Eagle, absolutely has found his lane as well in that.
Hey, don't sleep on Noah Eagle, man. I think he's going to be around for a little bit,
definitely,
man.
Definitely fine.
You not a fan?
Just the nepotism. He's good. He's good.
See, I thought he did a good job in the Olympics.
To bring it, yes, he did.
Better than Dwayne Wade.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true. To bring this full circle, right? If you want to complain about the nepotism, hello, Jack Collinsworth.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
Put him on that lawsuit. He was terrible calling Notre Dame football.
A football criminal.
Yeah.
Jack. Okay. All right. I have to honor.
I've never seen so many people complain about him at one time, about any broadcaster ever.
I wonder if that's in Chris's new contract, that he's got to be a role for Jack, too.
I bet it is. Vern Lundquist brought up, absolutely great. Buchagross on hockey. Yes, you're very right on that as well. They said, say it as a Houston fan, they hate to say it, John Smoltz is great on baseball. He is, but one of the things that's tough with a national broadcast, you can see some of the ways that he'll personally lean where I don't know if it's necessarily a bias in the way of like he wants that team, but he's just more interested in one team, and you hear that come out on the call, and I know that makes some people mad. And Hubie Brown, of course, because he's probably forgotten more about basketball than we'll ever know.
Still doing it, too. He's like 90 years old. He's still on those broadcasts.
Like, hey, man, go take a break. Seriously. Why are you going on these? All right, man. That's our question of the day here, Sports Radio 610 In the Loop. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL, talk about that Monday Night Football game with a couple of future opponents for your Texans, and Aziz Alshire finally getting a little bit of comeuppance for that punch. We'll talk about that more next.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.